Hello and welcome to the Lancet Gastroenterology and Hepatology podcast. I'm Laura Feetham and I'm really pleased to be joined today by Professor Alexander Ford, who's going to be talking about his work looking at treatments for irritable bowel syndrome. Alex is Professor of Gastroenterology at the University of Leeds and is co-author of a paper recently published in the journal comparing various traditional treatments for IBS. Alex, welcome to the podcast. First of all, could you talk a little about the burden of IBS among the general population and also the options available to GPs who see patients with the condition?
Yes, thanks very much for asking me to talk to you today, Laura. IBS is, or irritable bowel syndrome, is a common condition, and it is what's known as a functional gastrointestinal disorder, or more recently, these conditions have been relabeled as disorders of gut-brain interaction. So these are disorders that are incompletely understood but probably relate to complex multifactorial pathophysiology involving abnormal communication between the gut and the brain through the enteric nervous system. IBS affects between 5 and 10% of people living in the community. Not all of those people will consult a physician as a result of their symptoms, but probably 30 to 50% will see their GP because of symptoms, and IBS is a financial burden to the health service. So it costs up to about €8 billion in the European Union and probably in excess of $10 billion in the USA every year to manage IBS. So it's important that we use treatments wisely and that we have best evidence to inform our decisions when we're selecting treatments. GPs and other primary care physicians tend to use what we call first-line therapies, and they tend to include soluble fibre, antispasmodics, antidiarrheals. Some GPs will be happy to use other drugs like what we call neuromodulatory drugs, so drugs like low-dose tricyclic antidepressants or painkilling drugs like pregabalin. And so these are the drugs that we were interested in studying in our recent network meta-analysis.
So you and your colleagues did a systematic review and meta-analysis to compare a number of different treatments for IBS. What were your main findings?
So yes, we compared all of these different treatments in randomised controlled trials. So obviously when we test drugs in medical conditions, we usually do that in what's called a randomised controlled trial design. Often in IBS and even in inflammatory bowel disease, trials are conducted against the placebo, so it's hard to know which treatment is best because most treatments are not tested against another active treatment. They're tested against a placebo, which is an inactive control. So the network meta-analysis that we used is able to get around this problem because it uses the placebo-controlled trial designs, and you are allowed to compare the different treatments through the placebo arm of each trial because you make an assumption that the placebo that's being given in each trial is the same. So what we're then able to do with this network meta-analysis is actually compare all these treatments that we're interested in, and the meta-analysis allows us to rank the treatments according to the probability that they are the most effective, so the likelihood that that's the best treatment. And so we were able to look at the effect of all these treatments, firstly on global symptoms of irritable bowel syndrome at between 4 and 12 weeks of treatment. And we were also able to look at their effects on abdominal pain, again, between 4 and 12 weeks. And what the network meta-analysis showed us was that overall, when we looked at global symptoms, peppermint oil was likely to be the most effective treatment, followed by tricyclic antidepressants and then antispasmodics. And the other treatments that we looked at weren't actually more effective than the placebo in the trials that we were including in the meta-analysis. So that would be the Aspergillus soluble fibre, the SSRIs, which are selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, and pregabalin. And then in our abdominal pain analysis, what we showed was, as we would kind of expect, that tricyclic antidepressants, which have pain-relieving properties, and antispasmodics were ranked first and then second, and peppermint oil was ranked third. And again, all of those treatments were more effective than placebo. It's important to point out that many of these trials are quite old, and so the endpoints that they use are less stringent, and the designs that are used are also less stringent than those that are currently recommended by the Food and Drug Administration in the US and the European Medicines Agency in the EU. So they haven't been as rigorously tested as some of the newer treatments that we have available to us. But in terms of traditional therapies, this is pretty much the best evidence that we have, and this is the evidence that we used in this exercise.
So finally, what do you think is next on the horizon for IBS treatments, and what research do you think needs to be done?
Well, ideally, we need more head-to-head treatments of existing therapies rather than continuous placebo-controlled trials, because we know that when you're using a placebo as the comparator, the bar is quite low, and that's relatively easy for a drug, for most drugs, to show benefit. So what we really need is trials that compare one active drug against another, which will allow us to then make better inferences about the relative efficacy of one treatment versus another. The other thing is, what this meta-analysis shows is that the number of trials for many of these interventions or treatments is quite small, and the number of patients included in the trials is small, and so we need bigger trials. Most of these trials were done in secondary care, so if you're a primary care physician, then obviously you may feel that the results of this meta-analysis and the results of the trials that are included in it are not necessarily going to be generalizable to your patients. So, for instance, in the UK, we're now doing a very big trial called Atlantis, which is a randomized trial of amitriptyline in irritable bowel syndrome. So amitriptyline is a tricyclic antidepressant, and we're doing that in primary care in three regions of England. The other thing to say is that there are other treatments that are available in the US, which are used based on predominant bowel pattern of the patient, so whether that be constipation or diarrhea. And unfortunately, in the UK, many of those treatments are not available. So it would be good if some of these treatments were to be brought to the UK. And the other issue is that there are probably existing drugs which work on serotonin or 5-HT, which may also be effective for people with IBS, which are easily available and actually very cheap. And one of those drugs would be an anti-sickness drug called ondansetron. And again, we're assessing that drug, ondansetron, in a big randomized trial in the UK that's being done in 13 centers in secondary care, the Triton study. So actually, the UK is kind of at the forefront now of some of the IBS trials that are going on. There are other new drugs coming online. There's quite a healthy pipeline of drugs coming through in North America that are working on other mechanisms and are directed, again, at predominant symptoms like constipation or diarrhea, or even there are now drugs coming through that are going to be probably targeting pain more than anything else. So I think the future in terms of IBS-related research for drugs is looking quite bright at the moment.
Great. Alex, thanks very much for joining me today.